Hi everybody, Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Zalman Alpert, who is a reference librarian in the Gottesman Library up in Yeshiva University. And I read a nice article about him in the Jewish press. How are you, Zalman?
Good morning. How are you?
Good, very well. That was a nice article that was written about you in the Jewish press.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words.
Everybody knows what you look like now, okay? You can't hide anymore. You're a celebrity out there, okay?
Right.
So we're gonna be having an article written in the Jewish Action coming out in the fall edition. It's dealing with, it's called In Search of American Orthodox Jewish History by Zev Elif. And, you know, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about what's going on. It's a really interesting field. So he starts off with a quote, and this is what he says. American Orthodoxy has no sense of history. Records are not kept. Documents go astray. Historic figures who make significant contributions to the rebirth of Orthodoxy are quickly forgotten. So wrote Yaakov Jacobs, editor of the Orthodox Union Jewish Life, which was the predecessor of the Jewish Action, in 1980, in the August of 1980. What do you think? What do you think about that?
I think that's a pretty accurate assessment. Many of the archives of important Jewish organizations have either gone lost or have been sold piecemeal. For example, the archives of the Agudas Rabbonim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis in America, which until the early 1960s was a dominant Orthodox body in the United States, has either been lost or parts of it were recovered and sold on the market. But basically, they're gone. And I think that's true with many organizations, although, you know, Yeshiva University does have an archives, and we try to archive our own existence. But even at YU, a good part of our history is sort of lost, too.
Yeah, I mean, he quotes, as a matter of fact, I think a good friend of mine, one of the people I really admire, Rabbi Gilbert Klackerman, who wrote his dissertation, I think, on the history of YU and how he laments about the fact how hard it was to really get a lot of information, especially about the beginning years. Unearthing yeshiva's beginnings was a difficult task.
Right. As a matter of fact, some people, for example, Abraham Karp wrote a ground-setting article about the installation of Rabbi Yaakov Yosef as the chief rabbi of New York using documents from the Beis Medrash HaGadol, which was sort of the oldest Eastern European synagogue in the United States. And all those documents are lost today. I mean, the article was written in the mid-1950s. And by the 1970s, when people tried going back and seeing the sources that Dr. Karp used, the archives were gone.
Huh. Yeah, no, I mean, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I was surprised that the Orthodox Union, quite honestly, when I wanted to put together some kind of history, I thought it was going to be important. And to find that, we had very little. And as a matter of fact, even whatever little we had, we lost. Every time we moved to another location, we lost more. So, yeah, I mean, it's too bad because it could be great. But yet he said that there were certain places that did keep some pretty good records, I guess. And he mentions the KJ up on the Upper East Side, that they had some records from Rabbi Luchstein. And have you ever looked at, do you have those in the YU library?
I'm not certain if we have those. They may be part of the Yeshiva University archives, but I don't know off the top of my head. But there are organizations that kept good records. For example, in the archives here, we have the documentation from the Ezra's Torah organization, which includes lots of letters back and forth from the American rabbinate to important Eastern European rabbis and so on and so forth. And that's a treasure of important documents. But I think many of the archives that were saved were just saved in a haphazard manner. They weren't saved in a, let's say, it wasn't done in a purposeful way.
Right. He even talks about the fact that even in, let's say, in a synagogue that we all know, the Jewish Center, that there were, you know, archives, and Rabbi Young, who was the rabbi there for six decades, kept many of those, and then apparently it was destroyed in a flood in the basement. You know, because I guess no one really had a real safe, secure place to keep all of these things.
Right. I also think American Jewry at that point was still, well, let's call it a young Jewry, adolescent Jewry. And, for example, adolescents in real life don't keep their archives. I mean, adolescents are looking forward to going to yeshiva or going to college to become adults. And I think the same was true about American Orthodoxy. We were looking towards better years of growth and becoming a mature movement. And I don't think our history was that important, especially given the fact that Eastern European Jewry was still alive and well at that point.
Right. He mentions in the article that it's interesting that I didn't realize it, that Torah U'Mesorah was the exception, that they actually had pretty good records and they kept minutes and correspondence and so on. I guess you're familiar with that, right?
Yeah. No, that's interesting. It may just be the people who were at the head of the organization had a better sense of history.
But it costs money. I mean, let's face it. You know, in order of priorities, sometimes it really wasn't a priority to keep some of the records. I mean, certainly not in a safe, secure way. They went into some boxes in some basement someplace, right?
Right. I don't think that most people at the helm of various Orthodox Jewish organizations felt that keeping their records or their history was a priority. I think most organizations were working with limited budgets, and those budgets were basically used for growth and expansion.
Right. Now, he mentioned in the article also that he was hoping that maybe we could establish an institute for the study of American Orthodox Judaism. Has anything happened with that at all?
No, nothing. No. well, Yeshiva University, Professor Gurek teaches American Jewish history, and he has a slant on Orthodoxy here, but nothing in terms of research, publications, and things like that has been done, no.
And I remember the old days when I had Rabbi Grinstein.
Right.
Hyman Grinstein, right. Who wrote a book on
New York City,
and it was he was a fascinating individual, first of all.
Right, I understand.
Well, he was a great teacher, and his books were really, really, really great. But I know that, I mean, they talk about the fact that, let's say, the Aguda was able to get some kind of a grant to do something. And they were able to actually put something together, which is, I've been there, I've been to their offices of the Aguda, and they certainly have a lot more than, let's say, at the Orthodox Union, where we have really, I mean, it's really pathetic. It's pathetic. We have nothing. We almost, now for the first time, we're putting up old pictures that we first found, but I mean, there's nothing that we have. It's a chaval, but it's true. But at least at the Aguda, they have a room, and you know, I think the room is climate controlled, so they can keep documents, which is good.
That's true, but the OU isn't alone in that place. I mean, most of the histories of the important yeshivas in America are very clouded. The beginnings of Torah Vadas, Chaim Berlin, even RJJ, Rabbi Jacob Joseph and Laurie Klein. The histories, we don't really have any accurate histories or any archives for any of those organizations and any of those yeshivas. In that sense, YU is much better.
And, I mean, I guess at this point, is it lost forever at this point, or any way to recreate it or not?
Well, I think one way of possibly recreating is undertaking a project of oral history, of finding people who were active in the Orthodox world, let's say before World War II, and I think there's still some around, and getting them to talk about what they did and people they knew, and I think that would go a long way in at least recreating the history to a certain point in time. I don't think we can go back to the 19th century or much prior to World War II, but I think I think we're in danger of losing even the history of Orthodoxy in the late 1940s and 50s at present.
Really?
I think, you know, the American Jewish community is a very transient community that includes Orthodoxy, and various cities I've been to, and I've asked people about the rabbinate of the previous generation. There's hardly anyone there who even heard of these people, because most of the Orthodox Jews tend to either be Balei Tshuva or people who grew up in New York City and later settled in various places. There are not that many native people in these towns. For example, I was in Detroit a few years ago, and I went to various shuls there, and there was hardly anyone there who knew anything about a number of rabbis I was asking about. Wow. And it's true in my native town of New Haven, Connecticut, where in New Haven, not in my days, but we did have the first yeshiva gedola outside of New York, started by Rabbi Levenberg, and there's hardly anything, anyone doesn't remember him, and hardly anyone remembers his successors, the Rabbi Gorelick, Rabbi Shchatovitz, and I think that's also important in terms of local Jewish histories of recording and documenting the rabbinate and the Orthodox activists and synagogues.
No, you're right about that, because I mean, I grew up in a very well-established Jewish community, Crown Heights, and I don't know there's any real history of what happened there, let's say, in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. I mean, one of the most thriving Jewish communities. I don't think there's a, I don't think there are any real records. I'm not sure, but I don't think so.
A number of years ago, a friend of mine in Crown Heights, Rabbi Shaul Shimon Deutsch, who later wrote a biography, a controversial biography of Lubavitch Rebbe, while he was still part of the Lubavitch movement, was commissioned to write a history of Crown Heights and of Crown Heights Jewry, and I helped him a bit on that, and we put together something or another, which he presented at a public meeting in Crown Heights, but it was never published because, and this I think is a problem all over, because the rabbis in Crown Heights and the people in Crown Heights thought that anything prior to the arrival of Lubavitch in Crown Heights was not really important, and
right.
it was hard to convince them that, wait a second, I mean, there were synagogues here, there were rabbis here, there's a lively Jewish community.
Believe me, I lived there. There was a world that was there before Chabad came, before
right.
Lubavitch came, and the truth of the matter is that if Chabad, probably looking from historical point of view, if the Lubavitch had decided early on that this is where they want to be, because they weren't sure. When they first moved there, they weren't sure this is where they wanted to make their world headquarters. And if they had decided early on, maybe 10 years earlier, the whole neighborhood would have changed. Probably the neighborhood, as you know, the neighborhood changed completely, and many of the people moved out, and then it had a kind of, it was a kind of a rebirth at the Chias HaMesim, which is what they have today, but it would have been much different. So yeah, you're right. It was one of the most thriving Jewish communities in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. So yeah, but there is really no history of it. Very, 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 very little. And but Yeshiva University has, of course, quite a nice collection of materials and so on. So, what do you think is like some of the most precious stuff that you have that you've seen that people would be interested in seeing?
I think we have probably the most, the treasure of it, in my opinion, is the pearl is the collection of letters and postcards, correspondence by the Rogatchover, and it's back and forth their letters to the Rogatchover, and his answers are very very short, and you know, as well known, he only gave C references, see this and see that and see this. He didn't elaborate, but that's a treasure chest of correspondence, and it would take. It would take a real serious Talmudic scholar to unravel all of that. Some of it has been done in a project years ago by Rabbi Mendel Kasher and Rabbi Teitz were involved in, but there's still a lot of material there that hasn't been touched. In addition, there, as I mentioned before, there's the archives of Ezra's Torah, part of the archives of relief organizations during World War I, which also includes a lot of letters from rabbis in Europe to the United States asking for assistance, and letters from American Orthodox leaders. Also, we have a good part of the archives of the Vada Atzala during World War II, which I did a preliminary inventory myself many, many years ago, and I can assure our listeners that it's fascinating in terms of the rescue efforts that went on here to save the Bnei Torah in Lithuania, and then the Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai, sending packages to Polish Jews who were trapped in the Soviet Union during World War II in Asiatic Russia, and so on and so forth, and it's a fascinating collection, and I don't think much has been done in terms of that too. I mean, the Yeshiva University has made an inventory of it, but it's still open for scholars to do research.
So there's a lot of work that really has to be done. Are there scholars out there that are really devoting themselves to this?
Oh, I think we're seeing many young scholars who have gotten interested in Orthodoxy. I'm not sure necessarily in American Orthodoxy, but I think we're going to see some serious activity about this in the next 10 years or so. I think people like Zave Elif are sort of in the forefront of this.
That's great, because it's something so interesting and just fascinating. And you mentioned something about an National Orthodox Jewish Archives. What is that?
I will plead ignorance of that.
Really? Okay. He talks about it in the article. The National Orthodox Jewish Archives.
What does he say about it?
What he says is that they had a big fire, but then they've rebuilt, and they seem to be on their way. He says that they've regrouped and they've rebuilt, but I don't know much about the National Orthodox Jewish Archives.
Well,
but usually
the two chief archives with materials about Orthodox Jews in America are either Yeshiva University right here, or the Aguda Archives has a substantial collection too. In addition, there are private institutions, as you mentioned, that have their own archives.
Right. So what about, you know, where we live today is tomorrow's history.
Exactly.
So what are we doing about, you know, taking into account that someday people are going to want to know what we were doing? Is anything being done at all?
I think it's an individual decision by various organizations and synagogues. And my own belief is that not that much is being done, that even synagogues that don't dispose of their records are not keeping it in any organized manner. I don't think various organizations have professional or even volunteer archivists. So my own belief is that not much is being done.
Interesting. So, yeah. I mean, we could probably at the Orthodox Union encourage many of our synagogues, you know, to give us some of their documents from way back when. But the problem is we have to know where to store it. We have to put it in a safe, secure place. It's a real challenge. And I don't know if, as
right.
I said, you know, from
I also wonder whether many of these records actually even exist. I mean, I'm active in two old synagogues, one in Washington Heights called Beis Medrash HaGadol, which was the building was built in 1924, and we still have a minyan Shabbos morning. And Rabbi Besdin from JSS NYU served as the rabbi there for many years. And there are no records. There's maybe one or two dinner journals and a few odds and ends, but there basically are no records. I've looked. I've went through the safes. There are no records. And in New Haven, I'm active in another old shul, similar shul, Orchard Street Shul, Beth Israel, where Rabbi Flexer was a rabbi, and there's almost nothing there. And as a matter of fact, I found an interesting document from the Chevr Shas in 1920s with Rabbi Levenberg, who was the chief rabbi in the Rosh Yeshiva's name on it. And I called up the acting president of the synagogue, and I told him I'm very upset that it was just lying around on the Kiddush table. And he assured me that he would take care of it, yet I was there again a few months later, Shabbos, and it was still lying around there. So I think there needs to be a consciousness raising in terms of the importance of documentation and records of synagogues and of Jewish institutions, day schools, things like that.
Right. We're going to have to think about this a little bit, because it's an important issue, and yet, you know, it's a costly one, and you have to allocate funds. And I think we'll probably have to give it some thought at the Orthodox Union and see, you know, where, as I said, we don't have great records. Anyway, it's a pity. It's really a pity. But it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating, and something which is important. So I guess we're really not that different from what Yaakov Jacobs wrote in 1980 about where we were. I mean, so things have not really changed all that much.
I think in general, you know, Judaism really is ahistorical, because, you know, every generation has its ispashtusha de Moshe b'chol dor v'dor. Every generation has Moshe Rabbeinu, part of at least the nitzutz of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Torah is beyond time and space. I mean, and I think that's our view of history, which I think makes sense in the religious aspect. But I think we're also human beings, and I think we do need to record our history.
Yeah, no, listen, I agree with you so much, and I appreciate your coming on the show. So, everybody, it's Zalman Alpert, who is the reference librarian in the Gottesman Library. And thank you very much for coming on
and letting
us know about this. And who knows? Let's see. Maybe something will be done about it.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Altov. Bye-bye.